Chaim mentioned to us the other day that one of the more prominent Talmid HaChamim, one of the more prominent rabbis who lived in Saloniki in the 1500s, who ran away from Spain, was the Mabit. Mabit was Rav Moshe Ditrani. I think his family came from Italy originally.
Yes, from Italy.
From Italy, and he later settled in Tzfat in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yosef Karo also, as a young child, ran away from Spain. His father brought him to Saloniki, and then he also settled in Eretz Yisrael and Tzfat, many others. So the Mabit was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo here in Greece, in Saloniki, and later in Tzfat. And he was a member of Rav Yosef Karo's Beis Din. Even though they had several significant disputes, there's not a 95% of the dinim they agreed upon, and then some of the disputes were famous. So he also wrote a commentary on the Rambam, just like Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote a commentary on the Rambam that's called the Kesef Mishnah, because his name was Yosef Karo, and Yosef was collecting the money that his brothers brought from Eretz Canaan to buy food, and they brought, the second time they came around, they brought Kesef Mishnah. They brought twice as much money as the first time. The Rambam Sefer is called Mishneh Torah. So many of the commentaries adopted the name Mishneh, like the Lechem Mishneh, Mishneh Melech, and the Magen Mishneh. So the Kesef Mishneh adopted the name Mishneh in the title of his Sefer. So the Kesef Mishneh by Rabbi Yosef Karo always gives the sources of the Rambam, whether it's a Mishnah or a Tosefta or a Talmud Yerushalmi or a Gemara or a Psak Tshuvas HaGaonim. And once in a while the Kesef Mishnah will raise an issue that the Rambam has a Psak that does not seem to correspond with the earlier sources, and I'll try to deal with that. The Mabit, who was a contemporary of his, also wrote a Sefer on the Rambam called Kiryat Sefer, and he doesn't give any sources for the Rambam. He just, on every chapter in the Rambam, it gives you a synopsis of the chapter. It gives you a kitzer of what the Rambam said. And every so often he'll throw in some new concept that no one knows where in the world it came from. From outer space, he writes. So that's why people in yeshivas who have to say a chiddush, a boy learns in a kollel and he has to say a shtikel Torah, has to say a chabura. So what they'll often do is they'll look in the Kiryas Sefer and they'll discover some startling statement, and they'll try to make sense out of what the Mabit said. One of the more famous comments that the Mabit has in his commentary on Kiryas Sefer al Rambam is he's speaking about Erchin. In the Chumash, the end of Chumash Vayikra, you have a din. If a person accepts upon himself pledges to donate to Hegdish the value of another person, Damim, so the din is Shaman also Kevin Anim Kebashu. You assess how much the person would be sold for on the slave market, and that's considered the value of a person. Value is not sentimental value. Value is Kamahu Shava Limkar. Let's say someone destroys my little sitter. So the little sitter is worn out, it's torn, it's all dirty and old, and no one would pay a penny for it. But it has so much sentimental value to me. This is the little sitter that kept me alive when I was in the concentration camp. It has a lot of sentimental value, but if you would try to sell it, no one would. The market value is garnished. So the halacha says that that's not called value. Sentimental value doesn't count. Value al pidin is kamahu shavalim kabashuk. So if you pledge to donate to Hegdish the value of a human being or the value of a behemoth, so you assess kamahu shavalim kabashuk. How much is the behemoth? How much would the behemoth sell for? How much would the person sell for on the slave market? But then the Torah has another institution of erichin. The person says, instead of saying doma valai, I pledge to give to Hegdish, to donate to Hegdish the value of a person, he says erko alai. Erich also means his value, but it's erichin is the value designated by the Torah. So the Torah makes different sets, different values for men, for women, depending on their age. Below the age of 30 days, there's no din of erich at all. Between the age of a month and 5 years is one erich, between 5 and 20, 20 and 60, and above 60, and everything changes depending whether it's a man or a woman, based on the age. So that's the institution of Erevin. So we usually assume that a person who pledges, Erko Alai, I pledge to give to Hekdesh, I pledge to donate to Hekdesh, the fixed value that the Torah says a person, certain individual is worth, I say, I pledge to give my value, as the Chumash says, I pledge to give the value of Pliny, so you pledge an amount of money, like Dom of Alai. So the Kiryas Sefer, this Mabit writes in his Sefer, a very original idea, has no source whatsoever. He says, in truth, you're really Magdish, the person, and you're obligated to be paid to him from Hagdish. And the Torah fixes the amount you have to give in order to be paid to him. How in the world do I have the right or the ability to be Magdish somebody? I don't own him. He's not my Eved. How can I be Magdish him? So the answer is, I'm only Magdish him with respect to the fact that I'm obligated to be paid to him. So it's a very bizarre idea. He doesn't demonstrate that the Rambam said this. His Sefer is a commentary on the Rambam. He doesn't say that the Rambam said it. He thinks that that's the Poshep Shah. It turns out that one of the contemporaries of his, the one who wrote it probably a little earlier than him, the Shilta Gibbarim, lived before the 1500s, probably lived in the 1400s. Shilta Gibbarim also writes the same in order to answer a certain kasha, but it's a wild notion. So that's why his Sefer on the Rambam is not really used as much as the Kesem Mishnah. The Kesem Mishnah is printed on the side of the page, because he always gives you the sources for the Rambam, which are important. The Rambam never wrote the sources himself. And he always discusses that every so often the Rambam's Psak doesn't seem to correspond to what it says in the Gemara. And the Kiryas Sefer is usually very unusual. Then he has another Sefer, the Mabit has another Sefer, that's called Beis Alekim, a Sefer on Hashkofe. He talks about the Yud Gimel Ikari Amunah. He talks a lot about Amunah, a lot about Hashkofe. He's famous for his Sefer Beis Alekim is much more accepted than his Sefer Kiryas Sefer. It's quoted by the Meshech Chachma, and many others quote ideas from the Beis Alekim. As one of the ideas that he has, he was a Svardi, of course, and he davened Nusach Svardi. So the Gemara tells us the first bracha of Birchas HaMazon was composed by Moshe Rabbeinu. When the Mon came down, so Moshe Rabbeinu composed the first bracha on Zanas HaKol. When Yeshua ben Nun conquered Eretz Yisrael, then he had to add on another bracha, No Delecho, Alshin Chalta Abaseinu. We have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he gave us Eretz Yisrael. That's how it says in the Chumash, that when we'll come there, it's Israel, it'll be a land, Shalobit Miskenus Tochal Balechem, it'll not be a scarcity of bread. The Chalta Visavotam, we'll eat the bread and we'll be filled up with it. We'll be filled, we won't be hungry. Verachta Sashem Alakacha will praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the food, and also, Allah Oritz HaToy Lashin Asalot, we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He gave us Eretz Yisrael. So when Yeshua ben Nun conquered Eretz Yisrael, he composed the second bracha. Then the Gemara understands Al Oretz HaToivo, or Oretz refers to Eretz Yisrael. HaToivo refers to Yerushalayim. Because we have a pasuk in Chumash that refers to Yerushalayim as Ohor HaToiv HaZeh V'Halavonon. And Yerushalayim has two aspects to it. Yerushalayim is number one, the capital of Eretz Yisrael, and number two, the Malkum of the Beis HaMikdosh. So when David HaMelech established Yerushalayim as the capital, first he was the king in Hebron for 7 years, then he was king in Yerushalayim for 33 years. So when David HaMelech established Yerushalayim as the capital of Eretz Yisrael, which it is supposed to be, Al Pi Din, so he composed the beginning of the bracha, the third bracha. We thank you, Ribbono Shel Olam, for giving us Yerushalayim as the capital of Eretz Yisrael. He wasn't permitted to build the Beis HaMikdosh, David HaMelech, because the Navi told him, Dam Rab Shafachto, he killed a lot of terrorists. He kept Eretz Yisrael safe and secure, but the one who builds a Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be an Ish Shalom. So he was told by the Navi that his son Shlomo, whose name is Shlomo, peace, a man of peace, will be an Ish Shalom. There will be peace during his lifetime, and he will be Zecha to build a Beis HaMikdash. So when his son Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, then Yerushalayim became complete. Not only was it number one, the capital of Eretz Yisrael, the seat of the kingdom. It was number two, the makam of the Beis Hamikdash. He composed the rest of the third bracha. Third bracha, Birchas HaMazon, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us Yerushalayim as the capital of Eretz Yisrael and for giving us Yerushalayim as the makam of the Beis Hamikdash. After the Malchus Beis David no longer exists and the Beis Hamikdash is in a state of destruction, so the Chachamim changed the nusach of the third bracha. What are we going to thank the Rabbanu Shalom for giving us Yerushalayim as the capital? It's only supposed to be the capital when you have Malchus Beis David. What are you going to thank that he gave us the Beis Hamikdash, but he took it away? We don't have it. So the Chachamim changed the text of the bracha and they said, Rachim Noah. Habrachmanus Hamalchus Beis David Mishikacha on Tzir Mishkan Kvedecha the Lavayis Hagadol Bakadosh and Ikra Shimcha Olam. Habrachmanus on the Beis Hamikdash on Yerushalayim and on the Malchus Beis David. They changed the Nusach. So the Chachamim, the Gemara tells us, the first bracha, Zanas HaKol, was composed by Moshe Rabbeinu. So in Nusach Svar, towards the end of the first bracha, Zanas HaKol, they add on one line that Ashkenazim don't say, Ka Amur, as it says in Tehillim. What do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu composed the first bracha, Zanas HaKol, and he quoted a pasuk from Tehillim. Tehillim, that's in Tehillah LeDavid. That's in Ashrei. What we call Ashrei is Tehillah LeDavid. That pasuk, Vaseches Yadecha, came into existence later. So what do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu is quoting from Tehillim. How can that be? So doesn't it show that the Nusach Ashkenaz is more correct? That pasuk doesn't belong there. Must have been added in some later generation. So the Mabit, in his Sefer of Hashkafe, in the base of Akim, raises this issue. And he suggests that the Chachamim tell us, commenting on the pasuk in Chumash Mos, after Maimon HaSinai, after the proclamation of Aseres HaDibros, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Ale Eilai HaHora, I want you to climb up to the top of Har Sinai, Ve'et Nelachos Luchos HaEven, I will give you the two Luchos, which have the Aseres HaDibros engraved on them, Ve'et Nelachos Luchos HaEven, V'HaTorah V'HaMitzvah SheKosavti LaHorosa. So the Gemara says, Et Nelachos Luchos HaEven is a reference to the Aseres HaDibros, the Luchos. HaTorah is a reference to the Chumash. HaMitzvah is a reference to the Torah Shebaal Peh. Asher Kasafti is a reference to Nevi'im Uksuvim. Everything in Nevi'im Uksuvim was told in Moshe Rabbeinu. And Lahoro Sam Tepaskin is a reference to the Mishnayos, to the Torah Shebaal Peh, had a Paskin Shalmas. So the Gemara has such a tradition that every idea that appears in Nevi'im Uksuvim was told to Moshe Rabbeinu when he was on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. Asher Kosafti is a reference to Nevi'im Uksuvim. So that's what the Mabit suggests to defend the Nusach of the benching and Nusach Svar. All the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael in the 1500s at that time, they all have a Nusach Svar. There were no Ashkenazim at all then. There were only Svar. The Ashkenazim lived in Poland and other parts of Europe. But in Eretz Yisrael, there were only Svarim then, the 1500s. So he says, what was added in the later generations was not the whole line. It said, Paseches Yadecha Mazbiel Chol Chai Ratzalan. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the Pasuk. He heard the Pasuk from the Rabbanu Shel Olam, this idea. And Har Sinai, Asher Kosavti, is a reference to the Nevi'im Uksuvim. What they added in the later generations was after David HaMelech composed Tehillim. And Tehillim was incorporated into the Kisvei HaKodesh, they added the one word, Ka'amur. When Moshe Rabbeinu composed the first bracha, Zanas HaKol, he didn't say Ka'amur, as it says, in quoting chapter and verse, it wasn't yet included in Kisvei HaKodesh. But the line, Paseches Yadecha, he heard from Har Sinai. What was added later was just the word Ka'amur. This is his suggestion. He has a lot of famous things. There's another famous line in the Beis HaLikim, where he raises the question, how come we see in later generations so many Nochrim are converting to the Jewish religion? So he gives a suggestion. The suggestion that he gives is attributed to the Ger Tzedek, Graf Potocki, who lived in the days of the Vilna Gaon in Vilna, who was put to death by the government because he converted. He was from a very aristocratic family, a Goyish, a Polish family, and he converted to Judaism, but it was against the law, so they put him to death. But he was, so it's famous in the name of the Ger Tzedek of Vilna, but it already says in the Mabit from the 1500s. Ger Tzedek was in the 1700s. So they both have this idea. When the Rebbeinu Shel Olam offered the Torah to all the nations of the world, and they all turned it down, and then he offered the Torah to Bnei Yisrael, and everybody said, Nasa ben Ishma. So this is what they suggest. What do you mean? That no one in the Ummah Sana was interested in accepting the Torah, and every single Jew accepted the Torah. So they suggest probably the overwhelming majority of the each nation didn't want the Torah, but there was some Nachrim. There was a minority of Nachrim in every nationality who did want to accept the Torah. And all the Jewish people, everybody said, Kol HaShidib HaShem Nasa V'Nishma, everybody said Nasa V'Nishma. Probably the overwhelming majority said Nasa V'Nishma, and some of them said, no thank you, they're not interested. So that's what they suggest. Before the end of days, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will see to it that all of those Nachrim who are descendants from the original Nachrim, at the time of Maimon Har Sinai, who really wanted to accept the Torah, but they were outvoted, because the majority of their nation didn't want it, to before the end of days, their descendants will convert to become Jewish. They will join the Jewish people and become attached to the Torah. And those Jews who are descendants of the original Jews who were offered the Torah, and the Ruba of Bnei Yisrael said Nasa Nishma, but a Niud perhaps said, no thank you. So before the end of days, before Mashiach will come, their descendants will probably convert out of the Jewish faith. So they won't be Jewish. So by the time Mashiach comes, all those who are interested in Yiddishkeit will be Jewish, and all those who were never interested in the first place will not be Jewish. This is one of the many ideas that he has. He has a lot of original ideas. He has a comment on the pasuk B'Tzelem Elokim, Hashem created man, B'Tzelem Elokim. What does it mean, B'Tzelem Elokim? We believe that God doesn't have a body, he doesn't have a nose, he doesn't have lips, he doesn't have ears and eyes. So we usually assume, the Rambam and the Mor and the Buchum usually assume, that Tzelem Elokim means Chochmah. So the Mabit and the Kriya Sefer develops a different idea. And the Or Sameach in his Sefer, Meshech Chochmah, quotes this from the Mabit, from the Sefer Beis Elokim. And he says the Mekubalim say the same, that Tzelem Elokim really refers to Bechira Chavshis. Just like when God created the world, there was nothing forcing him to create the world. It's not that if you would be God, you too would create a world. It's not that this is part of being God. Rebbeinu Shel Olam decided completely out of his free will, he wants to create a world. So people were created, but Tzelem Elokim, we also have the ability to make decisions. Yesh Me'ayin, just like the Rebbeinu Shel Olam makes decisions, Yesh Me'ayin, there's nothing pressuring him into making a decision in one direction or another. So to human beings, have Bechira Chavshis, to make decisions, Yesh Me'ayin. We have considerations. It's less expensive to, it's more expensive to keep kosher. And it's easier to be Mechal Shabbos. It's more difficult to be an observant Jew. You're more restricted, whom you can marry, and so on. You're restricted in Hanos or Lamazet. There are a lot of restrictions. There are considerations that we have when we make our minds up whether we want to be observant at all. But bottom line, we all have the Bechira Chavshis to make this decision to be observant or not. So that's what the Mabit has in his Sefer Beis Elokim. He thinks that that's what it means, Tzelem Elokim. Just like nothing pressured the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, there's nothing forcing him to create the world. He created the world purely Yesh Me'ayin. He had this idea, Yesh Me'ayin, to create the world, and he created it Yesh Me'ayin. So too, all the decisions that human beings make are also Yesh Me'ayin. There's a lot of very nice ideas. He writes at length. It's not hard to understand. It's an easy Hebrew. He has a lot of ideas that are very famous, everybody knows, and then every so often, every three pages, will develop some original idea that's not that well known. The Mabit, as I mentioned before, was on the Beis Din of Rav Yosef Karo in Tzfat. 95% of the issues they all agreed, but there were 5% of the issues where they disagreed. And we still speak about the Mabit today. It's not like the Maharashdam, that basically he is forgotten today. And the Maritats for sure is forgotten. The unique opinions that they had, we don't paskin like. In that generation, they were crucial for transmitting the Torah to the new generation. They were more important as machanchim than poskin. We don't really say all good things for the Maritats or the Marashdam so much. But the Mabit, we still talk about a lot of his opinions. For example, the Torah tells us regarding Shemitah, the Hashviyas, the Peiros that grow, Hishnas HaShemitah, Tishmetenu Unetashto, should be treated as Hefker. So if I have a farm in Eretz Yisrael, a Jew has a farm in Eretz Yisrael, I have to open up the fences, Nishnas HaShemitah, and allow the public to take whatever they want. You have to treat it as Hefker. So the question is, how do you translate the pasuk? Tishmetena means the farmer should declare it as Hefker, or the Torah declares it as Hefker. Even the farmer doesn't. Let's say there's a farmer who's a Chiloni, Jewish, but is a Chiloni, he doesn't want to fulfill a mitzvah. He doesn't declare it as Hefker. Do you have the right to take the Peiros? Because it's what we call Hafkaita de Malko, the Melech Machi Amlochim, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam declared it as Hefker. But he's saying, no, the farmer has to declare it. So my guess would be that if you ask Yeshiva Bachram, I think most of the Yeshiva Bachram would say, like the Mabit, that it becomes Hefker automatically. But the Beis Yosef disagreed, and he said that that's not the Pshat. Hashvi'is Tishmetenu means it's a mitzvah on the Baal HaSadeh, it's a mitzvah on the farmer to declare the Peiros as Hefker. And calls mom that he doesn't declare it as Hefker, is Taka not Hefker? It won't be Hefker. And that's the accepted opinion, is that of the Beis Yosef, that the Peiros Shvi'is don't become Hefker by themselves. In fact, the Minchas Chinuch has a discussion. We know that women are exempt from observing mitzvah sasei shahaz magraman. In principle, they're potter. But I said there are so many exceptions to the rule. Matzah, they're obligated to observe. And Korban Pesach, they're obligated to observe. Kiddush, they're obligated. There's so many mitzvah sasei shahaz magraman that the women are obligated to observe. So there aren't any mitzvahs in the rule. Tzitzis and tefillin, okay, a couple of mitzvahs they're exempt from. Basically, even mitzvahs are said as mangrama, there are more exceptions to the rule than mitzvahs that are governed with the rule. So the Minhas Chinuch raises a possibility that according to the way Rabbi Yosef Karo understood, that the mitzvah of Hashviyas Tishmeten Onetashta is a mitzvah on the former to declare as Hefker the Peiros, so that should probably be considered a mitzvah sasesh as mangrama. It's a mitzvah that comes once every 7 years. So if a woman owns a farm in Eretz Yisrael, she perhaps would not be obligated to be mafka de peiros. She probably would not be obligated to be mafka de peiros. So it's based on this comment that the Minhas Chinuch finds a difficulty with the Mishnah Kiddushin. Mishnah Kiddushin tells the story, Ma'aseh v'chol mishnoshim. A man proposed to five girls, and he wanted to be Mekadosh then be Kesef. So there was a basket of fruit that grew in their farm and in Mishnas HaShemitah. So because all of the fruit was Hefker, so he wasn't stealing the fruit from the five girls. He had a right to pick it up and keep it for himself. So he took a kalkola, a perishvies, he took a basket of perishvies. The fruits and the vegetables had grown in the farm that was owned by the five girls. And he gave each girl back one of the fruits that grew on their farm, and they were all happy to marry him. All five girls agreed to marry him. So the Mishnah says that all five are Mekadoshes. Ba'aseh v'chamish noshim, and he took a kalkala, a basket of perishvies, and he's Mekadosh them. So that's what the Minchas Chinuch raises the question. If the fruits grew in the girls' farm, maybe the women are not obligated to be mafke the parents. Maybe we should treat it as the mitzvah sasesh as mangroma. If you would have understood like the Mabit, that the peiros that grow in Shnas HaShemitah become Hefker automatically, if the farm is owned by a Jew, okay, so become Hefker automatically, whether the owner of the farm is a man or a woman. But if you assume like Rabbi Yosef Karo, that it only becomes Hefker if you declare it as Hefker, and that's a mitzvah on the farmer to declare it as Hefker, so perhaps women would be exempt from that mitzvah. So that's a discussion. There's another very famous, more famous dispute between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Mabit regarding pears that grow in Eretz Yisrael Lishnas HaShmita. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, quoted a passage in the Sifro. That's the commentary of the Tanoim, otherwise known as Toras Kohanim, Sifro de Beirav. Toras Kohanim has a comment on the Pasuk in Parshas Bahar. So the Toras Kohanim has a comment, Lachem, the Lola Nochrim. So Rabbi Yosef Karo understands that line to mean that there's only Kedushas Perishvias, and pears that grew on a Jewish farm. If the pears grew on a farm that's owned by a non-Jew in Eretz Israel, so the whole idea of Kedushas Perishvias doesn't apply. What is the idea of Kedushas Perishvias? So the whole mitzvah of Kedushas Perishvias is the ochlo. The ochlo of lo lehefsid. You're not allowed to throw out, let's say you eat supper and you leave over some vegetables and you don't want to eat it. What are you going to do? You're going to put it in the freezer? No, tomorrow night you're going to eat the fresh vegetables. What are you going to do with tonight's vegetables? So on the one hand, it's a bal tashchis to throw it out in the garbage. Our mothers always used to scream at us, finish eating it, it's bal tashchis. There are starving people in Asia, there are people dying from starvation, so we should eat everything. So on the one hand, it's a bal tashchis to throw out the leftover vegetables. On the other hand, is a bal tashchis de gufa. The Gemara says, I'm going to overeat, I'm going to eat food that I don't need, and I'm not hungry for. So the Gemara says, bal tashchis de gufa, the bal tashchis on my body, is more chomer than the bal tashchis on the leftover food that I don't want to eat. So you throw it out in the garbage. So everybody knows, if it's shnas hashmito, we don't paskin like that. 6 years out of the 7 year cycle, that's how we say. Bal tashchis de gufo is odif, is more important than the bal tashchis on the fruits and the vegetables. So if you leave over fruits and vegetables, you don't plan to eat them today, you don't plan to eat them tomorrow, next week. So you throw it out in the garbage. But if it's perishvis, you're not allowed to throw it out in the garbage. Because the pasuk goes, the Shabbos os lachem le ochlo below the hepsid. You're not allowed to waste perishvis. So what do you do if you're not interested in eating it? So you're not allowed to put it in the refrigerator or the freezer, but you're not allowed to throw it in the garbage can. So you put it on the side, you put it in a plastic bag, you put it on the side, and you wait a couple of days till it becomes spoiled. You're not believed to put it in the refrigerator to preserve it longer, but you're not allowed to throw it out either. So you wait till it becomes nips on the achila, and then it loses its kedushas perishvis. So this is the interpretation that Rabbi Yosef Karo gave to this line in the Toras Kohanim. That if the perishvias grow in a farm that's owned by a non-Jew, there's no kedushas perishvias. And the Mabit disagreed, and he said, no, that's not what the Toras Kohanim means. Even perish that grew in a field that's owned by a non-Jew, Yevul Nochri, also has kedushas perishvias. So this was a big dispute for years and years. The overwhelming majority of the poskim, the tradition always was like Rabbi Yosef Karo, that whatever grew, Yevul Nochri, whatever grew on a Goyish farm during Shnas HaShmita will not have Kedushas Perishvias. But there's always the minority opinion of the Mabit. In recent years, the Chazon Ish insisted that the Mabit was greater than Rabbi Yosef Karo. He is getting Yeshiva Bacher, he never heard of the Mabit. Most of them, they heard of the Mabit, but they think Rabbi Yosef Karo is much greater. Chazanish thinks that Mabit was much greater than Rabbi Yosef Karo. We should be machma like the Mabit's opinion that there is Kedushas Perishvis, even in Yevul Nochri, even in Paris that grew on a farm that belonged to a non-Jew. So the question was, are you permitted to be machma like the Mabit? Because some Achronim write that years later, after the Mabit and Rabbi Yosef Karo both passed away, the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael issued a cherim. No one is permitted to be machmer like the Mabit, the halacha is like the Beis Yosef, and period. That's the end of the story. So the Chazon Ish tries to work on the history here. He thinks that that's not accurate. He thinks that there never was such a cherim, and that's a mistake. There was another machlokes between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Mabit regarding mitzvos atlius ba'aretz. And there they made a cher. Rabbi Yosef Karo, in his commentary on the Rambam and the Kesa Mishnah, quotes them, that the Rabbanim made a cher. That's a different issue. And it is that one is only obligated to be mafresh trumas and maisras, fruits and vegetables and grains and so on that grow in Eretz Yisrael, if when they were harvested and they were cleaned off, when you removed all the psolas and you packaged it, so if the miruach was done, b'shus ha-Yisrael. So in the days of the Tanaim, they had a situation like this. A Jew, a wealthy Jew, has a farm and is going to have to take off trumas and maisras. It's going to be a fortune. Maisa Rishon is 10%, Maisa Sheni is another 9%, the Maisa Mela Maisa, it's going to be over 20% of the tool he has to give away. So if you have a wealthy Jew, he doesn't want to give away so much Trumas and Maisvis. So the shtick that they pulled was, the Jew owned the farm, and when it's about time to clean up, to clean out the pears that were harvested, he would sell all the pears to a non-Jew, have the miruach done while it belonged to the non-Jew, clean, remove all the psolas, package it, and then the Jewish farmer would buy it back from the non-Jew. So that's what the Gemara refers to these characters, to these wealthy Jews, who are pulling the shtick. The Gemara calls them gzere mishum bale kisim. The wealthy Jews will do this shtick. So they made a gzere de rabbanon, that even if the miruach took place when the pears belong to a non-Jew, you still have to be mafresh trumas and maisras. So on this issue, on the gzeres balekisim, the Beis Yosef and the Mabit had a big dispute. But Yosef Karo's opinion was, and that was the accepted opinion, his view was that the gzeres d'rabbanan requiring hafreshes trumas and maisras only applied if it grew b'shus ha-Yisrael. The farm belonged to the Jew when the fruits of the vegetables and the grain was growing. And then the Jew sold it, he does a haroma, like now they do a het mechira, v'shnas ha-shmita. He does a shtick, a legal fiction, he sells the peris to the non-Jew. Non-Jew does the miruach, cleans out the psoles, packages it, and so on. And then the Jew buys the bags. And then they made a gzera d'rabbanan that you have to be mafresh trumas and maisras. What if the parents grew b'shus hanachri? Non-Jews own farms in Eretz Yisrael. So everything grew b'shus hanachri. The gidl took place, the avuah shlish, the growing, and the miruach took place. Everything belonged to the non-Jew. Then a Jew buys it. So Rabbi Yosef Karo was of the opinion that there's no gzerim in the rabbanon. What's literally a bul nachri, if a mamish grew in the farm that belongs to a non-Jew, you're not chayv to give trumas and maisras at all. And the mabit was machmer on them. So on that we know historically, the Chachamim, during the lifetime of the Mabit and Rabbi Yosef Karo, they made Xeris Nachash. Nachash is a Rosh Tevis Nidui Cherem Shamto. Why they call it Xeris Nachash? Because the Gemara has a pasuk initially, Paret Geder, Shochenu Nachash, a person who knocks down a fence will be bitten by a snake. So the Gemara interprets an additional level of interpretation of the pasuk to mean one who violates an Isser de Rabbanon, a Xer de Rabbanon is a Geder, a Seisyog la Torah, a Siog is a fence. You should really make a fence around the Torah, so you shouldn't come to do an Aveira. You shouldn't stand all the way at the cliff, you may fall over, so you should put a fence a little before the cliff to avoid violation of an Aveira. So for its Geder, one who violates a Xer de Rabbanon, Shechenu Nachash should be bitten by the Chivya de Rabbanon, by the rabbinical snake. Who's the rabbinical snake? That's a cherem. The Chachamim should put the fellow in cherem. So that's why when they used to make a cherem on one who violates an Isser Rabban, they would call it Zeres Nachash. Nachash. Nachash is the Rosh Tevis of Nidui, Cherem, Shamto. There are two or three levels of how serious the cherem is. There's Nidui in cherem, and then there's a dispute whether Shamto is identical with cherem. Oshamt is a third level, which is Mochamad Elchem. So this we know historically, the Kesef Mishnah quotes that. He had a dispute with the Mabit, he doesn't mention the Mabit, he had a dispute, and the accepted opinion was Rabbi Yosef Kara's opinion, that whatever grows in the farm of a non-Jew is not at all chayv in Shumas and Maisis, even with the Rabbanah. Only if it grew in the farm of a Jew, then the Jew sold the peiris to the Nachri, in order the Nachri should do the Miruach, the cleaning, cleaning process and the packaging process, and then the Jew bought it back. So that, in that case, they made a chumrah midrabbanan, they have to be mafresh to Mesa Mises. And then Rabbi Yosef Kari writes in the Gemara Mishnah, and the Rabbanan gathered together and they made a cherem that you're not allowed to be machmer on this. They say that historically the Vilna Gaon in the late 1700s decided he wanted to go on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote a letter to his wife and his children, famous letter, Alan the Trufa, how they should lead their lives after when he leaves on his way to Eretz Yisrael. And he traveled, and he went to Constantinople, and then he turned back. And it's very unclear, why did he turn back? Why didn't he continue to go on his way to Eretz Yisrael? Everybody has another guess. So one of the suggestions, in the history books, they say, he was never aware of the fact that was such a cherem, that you're not allowed to be machmer on pears that grew on the farm of a non-Jew. There were no Jewish farmers in the 1700s. In the 1500s, there were a little bit, 1600, a few Jewish farmers. 1700s, there weren't any Jewish farmers. So the Vilna Gaon had in mind that when he goes there, it's so he's going to be machmer, to be mafresh, chumis and maisis, on whatever paris he buys from the Nachar. Then when he arrived in Constantinople, that's where the boat left from Constantinople to Eretz Israel. So he looked around there, he found in the library the Tshuvas of Rabbi Tzalal Ashkenazi, it's a thin volume. And he discovered then that the Chachamim made a cherem. He wasn't aware of that. The Rabbanim and Yitzhak made a cherem. You're not allowed to be machmer. And he personally wanted to be machmer. So he turned back to Vilna and he didn't go. I find that hard to believe that he wasn't aware of that cherem. Because in my library, I don't have a Chuas Rabbi Tzal Ashkenaz, but I have a Rambam. On the side of all the editions of the Rambam, you have the Kesem Mishnah printed. The Vilna Gaon also had a Rambam with the Kesem Mishnah printed on the side. The Kesem Mishnah quotes this at the end of Perek Aleph in Hilchos Trumas. He quotes that the Rabbanim made a chem, you're not allowed to be machmer. So there's some Svarim wrote that just like they made a cherem, you're not allowed to be machmer like the Mabit with respect to Hafroshes, Trumas, and Maisris, and the Peres that grew, Bishnus HaNachri. So some say that such a cherem was made also with respect to observing Kedushas Peres Shviyas, on Paris that grew in the form of a non-Jew. So the Chazon Ish documentary shows that that's not correct, because there were Gedolim who lived in those generations and were Machmer. So obviously they didn't think that there was such a cherem. That's why today it's known that in Bnei Brak, they all follow the Chazon Ish, many of the people follow the Chazon Ish, most of the people follow the Chazon Ish, and they'll treat Yevul Nachri. When you sell in the stores during Shnas HaShemitah, so you sell Hetem Mechirin, you sell Yevul Nachri. So they'll treat Yevul Nachri as if it's also Kodesh B'Kedushas Peres Shviyas, like the Shita of the Mabit. So the Mabit is still spoken of today, in Hashkafe, for sure, and in Halacha also, his opinions I mentioned, unlike the Marashdam, and unlike the Maritats, who were sort of forgotten today, Mabit is not a forgotten figure.
Is it permissible to tour the Acropolis and Parthenon?
Here we go, Rabbi.
There are more than one building. You'll be going with a non-Jewish tour guide. You can explain to the guide that your group is not interested in hearing about any of the religions that used to use these buildings. You're just interested in seeing the old architecture that was shared in common with other buildings. If there's any architecture that's unique to a church, you're not interested in hearing about that. But if they want to show you just the nature of the buildings and the architecture, that's perfectly okay if you're prepared to stand in the sun and walk around for 2 hours. That's your choice.